You are listening to the Gamesman Pixel Tracks, the music trivia show that offers your favorite gaming currency.
Welcome one and all to the Gamesman Pixel Tracks, the show where you put your video game soundtrack knowledge to the test against your peers in order to win fantastic digital currency. I am your host, Steve Conger, also known as JSS Lifelike on basically every gaming service imaginable. So let me explain just how Pixel Tracks works. Each episode, you, the listener, will be given 6 audio tracks from various software titles across a vast array of platforms. Every oral example will be accompanied by a verbal clue as well, and each correct answer is worth 1 point, thus making a pure perfect score for each show, a total of 6. But that's not all. Collectively, all of the tracks together will share a corresponding theme of sorts. Guessing the correct answer for what ties the music together is worth an additional 2 points. How do you submit your entry sheet, you ask? Send your numbered responses to thepixeltrackshow@gmail.com, and they will be tabulated as they arrive. And that's spelled thepixeltrackshow@gmail.com. Remember, if 2 or more entrants result in tie, it will be broken in order of arrival, so get your answers in early. Leaderboards will be kept at thegamesman.com and will be accessible by clicking the tab above the main logo of the site. There will be a new Pixel Tracks every other week, so you have less than 14 days to get your submission in, as the answers to this episode will be revealed the following time. The listener in first place at the end of every 3 months or 6 episodes will win a $20 card of their choosing, and the rankings will be reset. Sounds easy enough, right? Don't get complacent, though. There could be a bonus question where you'd least expect it. I've also decided to consolidate the Gamesman minigame audio articles into a short editorial to finish out each Pixel Tracks installment. So let's get started. First, we'll reveal the answers to last show's queries. How many did you answer correctly? Let's see.
Selection number 1.
This turn-based role-playing game changed the way the world viewed the series by bringing it into full 3D. Almost. It was originally slated for release on the SNES, then was moved to the Nintendo 64 before finally seeing release on a platform that had much less storage restriction. What game is it? Final Fantasy VII didn't rekindle my love for JRPGs as much as it made my feelings regarding them skyrocket to a completely new level. I remember even purchasing it for the PC, but could never get it to ever run properly. Maybe that's just another reason it's being credited with being the game that sold the PlayStation.
Selection number 2.
This particular MMORPG gave players a pool of 6 classes to choose from that were changeable by either visiting their house or speaking to a certain NPC. Upon reaching level 30 in any of these professions, the player could choose one of 14 secondary support classes, though some required the 3 expansion packs designed for the game. Any guesses? Vanadiel is the backdrop for the massively multiplayer online role-playing game of Final Fantasy XI. Players could select the initial jobs of warrior, monk, white, red, or black mage, plus thief for their in-game tunes. With any of these mastered, a secondary class could be chosen, but some required the expansion packs of Rise of the Zealart, Treasures of Ot-Urgan, and Wings of the Goddess.
Selection number 3.
This third-person action-adventure game was announced at E3 2005, but saw no major gameplay-revealing footage until almost 2 years later. Electronic Gaming Monthly reported that the game had been quietly canceled in 2008, but this couldn't be further from the truth. Do you know the answer? Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles: The Crystal Bearers might very well be the greatest departure from the established mechanics of the franchise itself. It was, and is, meant to be the successor to the GameCube title, but implements its real-time combat in an action-adventure style instead of a party-focused ARPG. There was much interest when it was thought to be dead in the water, but considerably less upon its actual release.
Selection number 4.
Due to the feature of fully voiced dialogue for the first time in the franchise, this game's script was much longer than any of its predecessors. An international version was re-released in Japan nearly 18 months later that included 8 dark versions of bosses and one super boss with 13 million hit points. What game is it? Final Fantasy X featured something that it had seemed that I waited my whole life for. Voice acting tied to characters that I'd spend 80 or so hours with. The game brought about the replacement of the active time battle system with the conditional time battle one, which displayed a movie timeline that could re-slot actions depending on how each fight played out. It also featured the most robust progression mechanic since Materia, the Sphere Grid.
Selection number 5.
This third-person shooter spin-off featured action RPG elements and is set 3 years after the game that it was based on, featuring one of its secondary characters. It fell prey to less than respectable critical and commercial reception, with most reviewers agreeing that it sucks. When one considers Dirge of Cerberus Final Fantasy VII, over-the-shoulder Resident Evil 4-style gameplay comes to mind more than the typical turn-based role-playing that has long been a mainstay of the series, which is one of the reasons why its Metacritic ranking sits at a meager 57. The soundtrack was composed by Nobuo Uematsu's protege, Masashi Hamazu, which is why it so closely resembles that of his most recent work, Final Fantasy XIII.
Selection number 6.
This portable title is a prequel to one of the most prolific and genre-defining games of our time. It was not only released as a standalone game, but also in a bundle with a specially branded version of the hardware. It is the only game to receive an April Fool's Day re-review in which it scored a 6 out of 5. Any guesses? The plot for Crisis Core was an idea that Square Enix scenario writer Kazushige Nojima had in mind while helping pen the original script for Final Fantasy VII. The game featured several of the main characters of the original that it's based off of, such as Cloud, Aeris, and yes, even Sephiroth. Most of the soundtrack is composed by Takaharu Ishimoto, but due to the remixing of most themes, a good bit of crediting still goes to the aforementioned Uematsu. Those are last show's answers, but what do they all have in common? What ties them together? I don't know how much plainer the answers can spell it out, but if you're still unsure, they're all titles from the Final Fantasy franchise. Obviously, they come in all shapes, sizes, and formats, but each carries with it that Eastern game design philosophy and a love for androgynous characters. Speaking of, and for one bonus point, with the exception of the MMO, can you name the main protagonist for each of the entries? Aw, come on, that's a gimme, right? Hey, psst, hey, you. Just a little heads up, even if you're not in the running for the grand prize and you live in the United States, you might want to submit an entry for the next show, as I've secured a pretty neat prize that I'll select one person at random to win. To the rest of the world, my apologies. Shipping is murder. Okay, six more selections, you say? Coming right up!
Selection number one.
This game is a reboot of the original in the franchise and draws heavily on the beliefs of a religion called Zoroastrianism. It features open-world gameplay that entails open-ended traversal throughout the game world. What game is it?
Selection number two.
This third-person shooter is a sequel that features an iterated version of cover-based shooting and co-op gameplay that was present in the original. The console games feature region-free multiplay, while the PSP version is a top-down shooter that, according to Metacritic, doesn't offer much. Any guesses? We'll be right back.
Selection number 3.
This particular piece of software rocketed onto the PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and PC in 2010, and was boasted to be the full realization of a property that was shelved due to the end of the NES, even though that backstory was a complete fabrication. A spin-off was released on the DSiWare platform, then was ported to both the iPhone and PC.
Selection number 4.
This title was built on the Scimitar engine and was unlike anything players had experienced to that point, save for its spiritual predecessor. It has spawned one official sequel that remained on the same hardware types and one official prequel that landed on different ones. Do you know the answer?
Selection number 5.
The game in question here stole the crown of its specific subject matter from the then angular-breasted king, or queen for that matter, and during the design and development process was referred to as codename Big. The game utilizes partial motion controls and has a motion picture adaptation in its future. What game is it?
Selection number 6.
This downloadable dynamo packed the big box video game mentality into a considerably smaller piece of kit. Gameplay consists of item-based progression with backtracking in a side-scrolling fashion and features many RPG elements. Any guesses?
Where my winds blow, my hand still holds the rights to blame the high road I crawl down. Oh, what's the price you pay for all the ones you try to say? Oh, why? I've given everything I've got. Oh, wait, I still have a lot to give. That will set me free. In the end, yeah.
That's six Pixel tracks, so I ask, what do they all have in common? What ties them together? While you mull that over, I have yet another topic to get off of my chest. For this show's editorial, I ask for a little listener help from both Twitter and Google+. What was the question, you ask? Well, there will be a megaton of electronics Black Weekend deals post-Thanksgiving, so what games or game hardware are you looking to nab this year? Gamer Girl says, Batman Arkham City. As for why, number one, it's Batman, and number two, you get to play as Catwoman. Yeah, I think those were the best parts of that game. She says, I'd like to get a PS3 as well. I may have to see if I can find a good deal on one. SockMonkey1313 says, haven't seen any great deals yet, but I would really like to get a new 360 before this one red rings. I think we all would. SeanS52, he says, I'd like to get a 3DS for as cheap as possible, but no one seems to be offering one for $99, which is my current price of entry. And, being that they dropped the price, they are going to add in more value and cut the price even less. NDArchy89 says, probably none. I splurged and got all of the new games that I wanted these last few weeks. Besides, for us, the Thanksgiving weekend is for spending time with family, not spending money. On this one, I don't mind being old school. Now, there's something you don't hear often. I mean, I kind of did the same thing. I bought a bunch of games and, you know, all the ones that I wanted. And, you know, so I'm kind of free to be thankful for family without the distraction of games. All right, maybe that's a little bit of a fabrication. I'm always thankful for them, and I wrote a little piece for Nintendo Oki last week explaining just how appreciative I was 10 years ago. The Nintendo GameCube holds a special place in my gaming heart of hearts for many reasons, but one rises head and shoulders above the rest. Sure, I loved the compact form factor. Of course, I was excited that it narrowly beat out the mainstream competition in the PlayStation 2 and Dreamcast from a hardware perspective. And just as any Nintendo file, I valued my console exclusives more than any other at the time, but one specific piece of software tops my list. My infatuation with tight, intimate narrative experiences is what drives me to consume video games at such a robust pace. Funny thing is, I wasn't always that guy. I must admit that I played more than my per capita share of JRPGs because the scenarios were more complex than a typical platformer or third-person adventure. The only problem was that they were sometimes convoluted and confusing as well. But I wasn't truly satisfied from a story point of view until I brought home a little game titled Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem. Little did I know that Silicon Knights, who had a close relationship with Nintendo as a second-party developer, put time and care into an experience that would stay with me for the rest of my life. For those who have not yet played ED, and by the way, you are terrible people, the setup for the game is that a young woman, Alexandra Roivas, receives a call informing her that her uncle had been mysteriously murdered as she proceeds to investigate the mansion in which he lived. It is here, in a secret room, that she discovers the Tome of Eternal Darkness, a journal meticulously constructed of bone, then stretched and wrapped with skin. Each page that Roivas discovers enlightens her on events involving the book throughout the ages. Sound interesting yet? Just wait. The clincher is that later chapters take place in some of the same four locations, but employ a new protagonist with environmental conditions affected by the passing of time. Gameplay and mechanical systems were methodically employed by teaching actions in a rule set and then transforming them upon returning to that same locale. Each character's impact could be seen and felt in the time periods to follow, up to and including Miss Roiva's struggle to single-handedly represent humanity and save it from destruction. For me, Eternal Darkness represents the gaming industry's crowning achievement in full-circle storytelling. Uncharted 2 Among Thieves came close, and I do believe that it is one of the greatest games of our time, but it just doesn't hold that special place that I mentioned earlier. The way in which Sanity's Requiem edges it out, in my opinion, is the manner in which it seems to be a metaphor for the way that I, personally, play games. In replaying it quite often, which I'm known to do, I also revisit a specific place sometimes years later with a different perspective, though one thing never changes, my love for the title. So in summation, if you are indeed one of those horrible human beings who have yet to experience Eternal Darkness Sanity's Requiem, you're in luck. Your Nintendo Wii still carries the heart of its predecessor, so track down a used copy and help celebrate the 10th birthday of the GameCube. You may find a similar special place in your heart that you never knew you had. That will about do it for this episode of Pixel Tracks. Remember to submit your answers promptly to thepixeltrackshow@gmail.com. Don't fret if you miss a show. Someone above you on the leaderboards could possibly do the same, and not only that, but a correct guess as to the theme of each set list would go a good way to helping you catch up. Check the rankings at thegamesman.com and please share the show with a few of your friends. Don't forget to join us next week for a fresh episode of The Gamesman and let us know what you're playing on Twitter by using #TheGamesmanCheck. If you have comments, feel free to leave them about this or any other show on the site. Until next time, good luck and take care.
Not fully satisfied with this podcast, please return any portion short of full refund.
So you can run and tell that, homeboy.